What's desired in a man is kindness. Proverbs chapter 19, verse 22. That's what we discussed this morning as we talked about the need for exhibiting kindness. God is kind, therefore we ought to be. His word commands us to be kind, therefore we need to be obedient to that charge. Practically, if we choose to be kind to other people, they'll be kind to us. We practice the golden rule. We shouldn't be surprised that we'll reap what we have sown. We talked about the need to be sensitive as it pertains to kindness. We talked about the need to be sympathetic, to be strategic or seeking, and to be spontaneous in the matter. And so, like we discussed this morning, we live in a world where kindness is hard to find. In fact, you know that woman, huh? You should know so many women. But anyway, I read an article just today about a man who was quite elderly, who someone became angry with him on the road and followed him to his house and just about beat him to death. And he was evidently the suspect was a much younger man. And I just thought to myself, how does somebody do that to someone else? Over the smallest of things. We live in an angry society, an angry world, a dark world, a world where hatred oftentimes trumps love. And so we need kindness desperately. And so tonight we're not going to go over the same terrain we did this morning. We want to talk about the habit of kindness more in the practical vein of things. And we want to do it through the eyes of Jesus. And hopefully what we see tonight will help us to make perhaps even greater application than what we would have otherwise. So if you feel like you got your fill this morning, notice if you feel like you got your fill this morning, then feel free to close your eyes and go to sleep. And I say that because I know some of you will, and that'll make me feel like I suggested it and I'll feel better about myself. It's a psychological ploy. A number of years ago, I purchased a book called The Jesus Habits by Jay Dennis, and it was a really helpful read as the author went through the life of Jesus and looked at, you know, what was Jesus' life all about? You know, what were his routines and his rituals and his habits made up his life? And so one of the habits that Dennis talks about in the book is the habit of kindness. And so this is found in the book itself. The Jesus habit of kindness is choosing to be sensitive, understanding, gentle, and compassionate to everyone you meet. It doesn't take a genius at all to look at that and understand it and think about, how can I live that out in my life? How can I practice that? Because that particular idea is very descriptive of the life of Jesus and how he treated everybody. And so tonight we're going to talk about the kindness of Jesus. And if you have your Bibles, like I said, turn to Matthew 15. And let's think about the Jesus habit of kindness and how he viewed things and what grabbed his attention. I would tell you, I don't think this is going to take very long, but I'm afraid to say that. Because it seems like any time I've ever said that, I preach for an hour and a half. And I don't want to do that to you. Jesus was kind to people in need. As we talked about this morning, the need to be sensitive. Jesus recognized needs, the needs of people. And he was quick to seek remedy for whatever circumstances people were in. So notice verse 32 of Matthew chapter 15. This is the parallel of what we saw a week or so ago in the book of Mark when Jesus feeds the multitudes. But Jesus has been teaching, the people are following him, and he recognizes that there's a problem. So in verse 32, the text says, "Now Jesus called his disciples to himself and said, 'I have compassion on the multitude, because they have now continued with me 3 days and have nothing to eat. And I do not want to send them away hungry, lest they faint on the way.'" Verse 32 is extremely important because, again, what do we see as we pay attention to the life of Jesus as it has to do with this idea of kindness? Kindness and compassion, as we said this morning, like sympathy, they all fit together like hand in a glove. Jesus sees the people. He sees their circumstances. He knows that they're struggling. It's been 3 days. And so he sympathizes with how they're feeling, and he seeks opportunity to remedy it. And that leads us to this next idea. Now, you know, if we went through the rest of this text, as we did a week ago or so, he feeds 4,000 people besides men and women. He does so with 5 loaves and 2 fish. And of course, the miracle itself was to show, as John's account helps us to see, that indeed Jesus is the Christ, the Son of God. Only someone who has great power, the power of God itself, could possibly feed multitudes of people, several thousand, with so little. But what we want to note is, it's Jesus' compassionate heart, his disposition for kindness, that moves him to act. And that brings us to the next idea, just a few chapters later. When Jesus saw a need, he didn't simply say, "Isn't that horrible? Isn't that terrible? Isn't that such a shame that those people are all hungry? Or those people are in need?" Again, when we think about Matthew 15, like Mark 6, Jesus took care of the situation. He had the ability, and so he did. Now, what I like about this section is that when you look at it, you see the normal mentality of most people when it comes to those who are in need. In Matthew chapter 20, if you'll notice, we'll start back at about verse... About verse 29. It says, "Now as they went out of Jericho, a great multitude followed him, and behold, 2 blind men sitting by the road, when they heard that Jesus was passing by, cried out, saying, 'Have mercy on us, Lord, O Lord, Son of David.'" Now notice how the general population, the general group, people in the crowd, how they view these men. "Then the multitude warned them," verse 31, "that they should be quiet. But they cried out all the more, saying, 'Have mercy on us, O Lord, Son of David.'" Now, again, when we think of people in need and the show of kindness, the display of it, most people aren't particularly interested in it. And even though the crowd themselves are saying to these blind men, "Hush," notice Jesus' response to their circumstances. Verse 32, "So Jesus stood still and called them and said, 'What do you want me to do for you? What can I do? How can I help you?' They said to him, 'Lord, that our eyes may be opened.' So Jesus had compassion and touched their eyes, and immediately their eyes received sight. They followed him." Now let's think about this concept of kindness. You know, oftentimes kindness and goodness are very closely related. Kindness and compassion are very closely related. Compassion is certainly a feeling, but it's a feeling of emotion, of tenderness towards someone in need that prompts the person who feels it to act. Kindness is a disposition of mind. Goodness is the carrying out of what needs to be done, the blessing the person with your help, your encouragement, the meeting of their need. We see Jesus doing that, don't we? As we've studied Mark for the past 14 years, you've noticed that Jesus was continually dogged by the crowds and the multitudes everywhere he went. We've seen again and again. He goes to a deserted place. What happens? The crowd show up. He goes into a house. What happens? A crowd shows up. He goes to Gentile territory. What happens? A Gentile shows up. He can't get away from it. And if there was anybody who perhaps, as he's going along his busy day, seeking to do what he has to do, if anybody would have had the right, we might say, or we might understand the disposition of not listening or paying attention to these two men, we could understand how Jesus might feel that way. But he's not like that at all. He meets their need because he's compassionate. He's kind by nature. John 21. Jesus was compassionate to those, or kind and compassionate to those who let him down. We talked about this morning that the kindness of Jesus is a kindness that's demonstrated toward and extended to those even who are unkind, those who don't deserve a kind gesture. You know, it's easy to be kind to people who are kind to us, isn't it? So-and-so needs something. Well, I ought to help him. He's done a lot for me. Well, you know, that's a good motivation. But Christian kindness is you do it simply because it's the right thing to do. So if you know about Peter and his relationship to Jesus, you know that at the end of Jesus' ministry, as Jesus was headed toward the cross, as he was getting closer and closer, his disciples were with him, And he began to teach them and warn them about what was going to happen. And it was Peter who said, "Lord, I'll go to prison and to death with you." And Jesus said, "Peter, tonight you're going to deny me three times." And Peter said, "Not so, Lord. It's not going to happen." And of course, as Bible students who've been around a while, we know exactly what happened. Peter indeed did deny Jesus three times, and then he went out and wept bitterly after all was said and done. Now let's notice John chapter 21 after this happens. The disciples aren't certain what's going to transpire, and Jesus appears to them one of the post-resurrection appearances. And verse 15 says this, "So when they had eaten breakfast, Jesus said to Simon Peter, 'Simon, son of Jonah, do you love me more than these?' He said to him, 'Yes, Lord, you know that I love you.' He said to him, 'Feed my lambs.' He said to him again a second time, 'Simon, son of Jonah, do you love me?' He said to me, said to him, 'Yes, Lord, you know that I love you.' He said to him, 'Tend my sheep.' He said to him the third time, 'Simon, son of Jonah, do you love me?' Peter was grieved because he said to him the third time, 'Do you love me?' He said to him, 'Lord, you know all things. You know that I love you.' Jesus said to him, 'Feed my sheep.'" How many times did Peter deny Jesus? Three times. But with great tenderness and kindness and gentleness, he allows him to reaffirm his commitment to him. How many times? Three times. As we think about the account, he doesn't barrage Peter with harsh words or tell him how horribly Peter had disappointed him. Nothing like that, rather. He extends, again, the hand of fellowship, of warmth. "Do you love me?" And what did Peter go on to become and do? He preaches the first gospel sermon. He's the apostle to the Jews. He writes those great letters. There's so much that we benefit from because of Peter's ministry. And it all goes back to Jesus, his kindness, his willingness to give Peter a second chance. And Peter got a lot more than that, just like all of us do. But Jesus was kind to those who even let him down. And here's one. We think about the kindness of Jesus a few chapters back in John chapter 8, verses 1 through 11. We read of the woman who was caught in adultery. And again, the only reason they brought her to Jesus was because they thought that they had him in a bad situation. The penalty for adultery was stoning. It was death. But only the Romans could carry out capital punishment. The Jews knew that. So they're going to bring this woman who was caught in the act of adultery. And they're going to ask Jesus, "What shall we do to her? Should we put her to death? Should we stone her?" Now, if Jesus said, "No, don't do it," they'd say, "Oh, you don't believe the Torah. You don't believe in the law of Moses." But if he said, "Go ahead and do it," then they'd go tell the Romans, "Hey, you got a rogue Jew over here that's practicing capital punishment without the proper channels being used." So they felt like they really had it. But let's think about, imagine for a moment, you're this woman. You know, as far as I can tell, she was caught in the very act. The fishy thing is, there's no man involved, and in these kind of situations, in order for proper legislation to take place, both the man and the woman were to be brought, but the man's nowhere to be found. So there's something fishy about this in the first place. But notice John chapter 8, verse 1, or verse 2 is where we'll begin. It says, "Now early in the morning, he came again into the temple, and all the people came to him and sat down and talked, and he sat down and taught them. Then the scribes and Pharisees brought to him a woman caught in adultery, and when they had set her in the midst, they said to him, 'Teacher, this woman was caught in adultery in the very act.' Now Moses in the law," here's where they're going, they think they might have him, "commanded us that such should be stoned, but what do you say?" This they said, testing him, that they might have something of which to accuse him. But Jesus stooped down and wrote on the ground with his fingers, though he did not hear. So when they continued asking him, he raised himself up and said to them, "He who is without sin among you, let him throw a stone at her first." That's a verse of scripture that's misused a lot as if to indicate that nobody could ever make accusation against someone unless they're sinless. That's not what Jesus said. He was a Jew. He understood the law. But on this occasion, the witnesses were to be the ones to throw the stone. Things were to be done judicially correctly. And none of it had been done that way. So there was nobody who could cast a stone at this woman and be right in doing so, because the whole thing is a farce. The way that they've brought her, the man being absent, all of this It smells fishy because it is. So Jesus says, he who is without sin, cast a stone. Let him cast a stone at her first. Verse 8, and again he stooped down and wrote on the ground. Then those who heard it, being convicted by their conscience, they know he knows, went out one by one, beginning with the oldest even to the last. And Jesus was left alone and the woman standing in the midst. When Jesus had raised himself up and saw no one but the woman, he said to her, woman, where are those accusers of yours? Has no one condemned you? She said, no one, Lord. And Jesus said to her, neither do I condemn you. Go and sin no more. This woman didn't have a friend in the world. Think about it. She didn't have a friend in the world. This mob, this crowd of people, they were using her as a pawn. And we think about how women were often treated. She didn't have a friend in the world. But who was willing to be kind to someone that generally most people wouldn't take the time to show kindness? Jesus did. And think about how unpopular it was. His soundness was on exhibition or on display or under analysis. In one sense, he had choices he could make, and he chose neither do what the law said or don't do what the law said. But in his mastery of every situation, he was able to demonstrate and show for her sake that what these people were doing was so very, very wrong. Their lack of kindness was rooted out in Jesus' kindness, even to the unlovely, is on full display. Or the one, the underdog, the one that generally nobody wants to be kind to. In John chapter 9, remember the man who was born blind and Jesus healed him, and what happened to him? He was cast out of the synagogue. If you were cast out of the synagogue in your community, you lost everything. You had no more relationships. And in John 9 and verse 35, the text tells us Jesus found him. After all was said and done, who went looking for him? Jesus did. The kindness of Jesus to those who need it but seldom receive it. We see that as we study the life of Jesus. And now just let's close this thing up here. It won't take but about another 35, 40 minutes. Enemies of kindness. All of these things are the exact opposite of Jesus. Sorry that's so small, but there were some problems with the PowerPoint. Self-centeredness. We might ask, well, why do I have to be kind? No one worries about me. Self-centeredness is an enemy of kindness because all we're thinking about is ourselves. What's an enemy of kindness? Just simply a lack of concern. We're caught up, and these overlap, we're just caught up in our own worlds and our own problems, and we forget about the need to show kindness to those who are around us. Enemies of kindness, bitterness. Where has being kind ever gotten me? And the last time I went out on a limb for somebody, this is what happened. Okay, that's an enemy of kindness. Busyness. I'm too busy to take time to do something for somebody else. I've got too many things going on. Well, if that's true, then you're just too busy. Was there anybody any busier than Jesus? Nobody. But yet, again and again, what do we see during his ministry? People would ask him to do something, and he would stop and take time to do it. We all ought to be involved in the ministry of interruptions. In other words, life is all about interruptions. People interrupting our lives and our agendas and our what we have in mind. And that's where ministry oftentimes begins, is during those and in those interruptions when people need us for whatever. Making kindness a habit. I'm just going to go through these, and I think they're self-explanatory. Determined to be kind to everyone you meet. You can do that. Understand that people are either going into a storm or in a storm or just coming out of one. Everybody's having a hard time. You say, what does that mean? Sometimes people come across as if they're not worthy of our consideration for kindness. We never know what they're going through. That waitress who's not as friendly as you might think she ought to be, maybe something's going on in her life. And maybe you have an opportunity to ask, is there something I can do? How are you doing? You know, is everything going all right in your world? You'd be surprised how people will open up to you when you have that sort of a mentality, when you look for opportunities to be kind. Smile, it encourages people. My smile looks like I'm angry, but I'm smiling on the inside, I promise you. Do a kind act for somebody as often as you can. Write an encouraging note. We don't write much anymore, but send an email, send a text message to somebody who you know is struggling or going through something, or just out of nowhere because you appreciate somebody. See if that act of kindness doesn't make their day. Take the initiative to speak to people. Now, I know some of us, that's just not our personality. I get it. But I find it interesting. The next time you go into the store and maybe your cashier's not very friendly, look them in the eye, look him or her in the eye and say, "Hey, how are you doing today? Everything going all right? You getting off here in a few minutes?" It's amazing how people just kind of brighten up when you do that. Now you're thinking, "I don't talk to people. My mother told me never talk to strangers." So I got you. That's not everybody's personality. But you might be surprised the good that that can accomplish. Take time to listen. A lot of hurting people out there who just want somebody to listen to what's going on in their life. Be kind, expecting nothing in return. That's the kindness of Jesus, isn't it? Be a friend to someone whom the world has abandoned, like the woman that we just read about, or the man who was born blind, cast out of the synagogue. There's a lot of people that nobody else tends to pay attention to. Find who they are. Pay them attention. If you've been unkind to somebody, go back and make it right. Matthew chapter 5. 22 and 23, Matthew 18:15. Be found guilty of committing random, senseless acts of kindness every single day. The habit of kindness seen through the eyes of Jesus. Again, like last week, I said we're done with this forgiveness stuff. We're done with this kindness stuff. But oh, how desperately we need it, don't we? You know, the great thing about choosing to be kind to other people, again, it comes back. It comes back again and again. And remember that if you desire to be kind, it's the same powerful gospel that saves you from your sins that can empower you to have the disposition we're talking about, to grow in that regard and to become everything the Lord wants you to be. But first you have to obey the gospel, become a Christian, and then the Lord will begin that transforming, conforming process in your life. Pursue kindness. We can help you. Won't you come as John leads us?